Leviticus 25 and verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Good morning. I would like to welcome you today to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast brought to you by the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. This is Pastor Wynn Greer. And along here with me today is my sidekick, Noah. How are you this morning, Noah?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. I want to say how much we appreciate our listeners today, those on AM 1450 WATA right here in Boone, and also those who are listening in on AM 690 in Bristol, Virginia. I had some people come up to me a few days ago and saying how much they appreciated listening in, and it's always good to get some feedback.
It is good to hear and talk to somebody that's listening on the radio, and I always appreciate that. And sometimes you don't think about just how many people do listen in, but it's a blessing. And I guess if you figured them all up, it'd be more than you would realize. And so I also appreciate our listeners. And I've got so much that I want to get into today. I don't even know where to start at, really. There are so many things going on in the world with that have biblical ramifications, you might say, and it's hard to even know where to start. I've got a few things I want to mention today, but first of all, I want to make an announcement, and that is our revival coming up. It'll be here before you know it, just a few couple of weeks away. Revival, March 18th through the 21st at Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. Dr. Ben Carper is going to be with us. He is over the Bright Spot Hour ministry, and maybe on other stations you hear him. I know he's on WZAP every weekday morning, but Brother Carper is going to be with us March 18th through the 21st. On the 18th, the Sunday, we'll start in the 11 o'clock service, and then that afternoon, now I announced this different last week, but I'm not going to go over what I did say. I'm just going to say that afternoon on the 18th at 2 o'clock, we're going to have a afternoon service. We will not have a night service that night, but at 2 o'clock we're going to have a afternoon service. So if you are in the area and maybe you'd like to come, but you have church Sunday morning and Sunday night, you could come be with us that afternoon at 2 p.m. And the Norris family is going to be with us there, Lord willing, on that Sunday. They're going to sing. And then Monday through Wednesday, we'll start at 7 o'clock. So put that down on your calendar. We'd love for you to come and be with us. If any of you pastors, I invite all of you, but if you'd like to come over and be with us in any of those services, just come bring the church. We've got plenty of room, and we can make room. But we'd love for you to come and be with us there. So I wanted to mention that. And I want to say also that our thoughts and prayers are going all out to all those who have been affected by the recent outbreak of tornadoes in our nation. I believe the last total that I heard on that was 38 people had died as a result of the tornadoes. And then many more than that have lost their homes, the homes destroyed, cars, land, all kinds of things. A lot of interesting stories about, even right down here in Charlotte, children being literally sucked out of their house and survived. And then others, of course, did not survive. But our thoughts and prayers go out to those that have lost loved ones and lost their homes. I say that I wanted to mention, just as a matter of interest, that last Saturday's newspaper, the Winston-Salem Journal, had two headlines that stood out to me as I looked there. One said, "Tornadoes hit Midwest again. Second wave of storms kills at least 20 in three states." Now, that was last Saturday, of course. And then right down underneath that, this is all on the front page, it said, "Obama warns Iran and Israel." And he gives clear sign yet that U.S. could attack Iran, but you'll see there that he warns Israel. And I seen a article this morning, an opinion article, and it said that Obama was a frenemy to Israel. and talking about how that sort of talking out both sides of his mouth, he's a friend and an enemy to Israel. And really it just depends on who he's talking to. But I mentioned those headlines there about Israel and then the tornadoes in the United States of America. Now, you may not agree with me on this point, but I believe there is it's more than a coincidence. I believe there's an established pattern of how we deal with the nation of Israel and the catastrophes that come up on our nation. Now, I'm not going to talk about that today, but I would invite you to go to mountlebanonbc.org, and we'll give the address there a couple of times today, but mountlebanonbc.org, and go to the tab of sermons and click on that. If you go down, there's a sermon on there, Israel Part 2, and in that message I give what I believe to be irrefutable documented evidence that when America wrongs Israel concerning her land, it has over and over again coincided with huge catastrophes. You can go all the way back to October of 1991. There was a movie made about The Perfect Storm. In fact, I believe that was the title to the movie, The Perfect Storm, and it's about that storm. And what it doesn't tell you is that at the same time that storm hit the northwest section of our country and came all the way down the east coast, Elderbush number 41 had began what they refer to as the talk about peace talks over in Spain. And when he was opening up over there, God was opening up his house over here. And that message talks about all of those things and goes down and gives example after example of us pushing Israel to give away land, and hurricanes and Yasser Arafat coming to our country, and tornado outbreaks and droughts and stock market crashes, and even 9/11, Hurricane Katrina. And so the whole message just dealt with that and gave example after example. It's very interesting. I believe it'd be worth an hour of your time. I got a message over the weekend from a preacher who had listened to that message, and at the same time he had listened to that message, he said he heard the news about the tornadoes hitting our nation. So it's very interesting what's going on in the day and time in which we live. Then, what I was going to talk about today, Noah and I both have just read a little book, and I highly recommend if you can get a copy of it. It's by Andy Andrews, and the title to this book is How Do You Kill 11 Million People? And Noah and I will probably be talking about that next week, Lord willing, but it's a very interesting book. How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Why the Truth Matters More Than You Think. And I was going to talk about that. What that is about is Hitler and Nazi Germany. And it's not just the 6 million Jews that were killed during the Holocaust, but also there are Christians, gypsies, foreigners to Germany that were living in Germany at that time, those with differing political views. They put to death the handicapped, both mentally and physically. They executed the elderly people that could no longer take care of themselves. How do you kill 11 million people? And I'll just give you the short answer today. And maybe if you can find that book and read it, you'd be wise to do that. And the short answer to how you kill 11 million people is that they lied. And the people believe the lies, and so they just went along with all those lies, and it ended up 11 million people. That's startling, that's staggering, to think about that many people being put to death by their government in such a short period of time. So we'll be talking about that, Lord willing, on next week. Now, what I want to talk about today is the subject, and I'm going to give you a title this morning. I want to talk about the Feast of Purim, how the right to self-defense preserved a nation. The Feast of Purim, how the right to self-defense preserved a nation. Now, the Feast of Purim, or as it might be called today in Israel, the Holiday of Purim, it is a Jewish holiday. And it begins this year, March the 7th, and it begins March the 7th at sundown, and it ends March the 8th at sundown. So if you were in Israel this week, you would get in on the celebration of the Feast of Purim. Or if you live somewhere where there was a Jewish population, you may know that these festivities will be going on this week, starting tomorrow, or if you're listening in on Saturday, of course, it would have already taken place. But anyway, Purim, it's celebrated today. It comes right out of the Bible. Purim comes from the word P-U-R, pure, pur, and it means the lot. And that's what it is referred to. We learned that from the book of Esther, chapter 3 and verse number 7, and it's called that because if you know anything about the book of Esther, you know that they cast lots. Esther chapter 3 and verse number 7, the Bible says, in the first month, that is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur, that is the lot, before Haman from day to day. And so they cast lots. And what they were doing, they were rolling the dice to see what day they were going to execute and put to death all the Jewish people. And that's where the Feast of Purim comes from. It's a national celebration, though, and it's set forth. It comes right out of the Bible, the book of Esther. And Mordecai wrote down that the Jews would keep this celebration from year to year. Esther chapter 9 in verse 21 tells them to keep this certain day. In verse 22 says, Mordecai wrote these instructions here, said to keep the Purim as the days wherein the Jews rested from their enemies, and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to joy, and from mourning into a good day, that they should make them days of feasting and joy, and of sending portions one to another, and gifts to the poor. And so in Israel, they celebrate the holiday of Purim. They have festivals. They give gifts. They have feasts. They have prayers. It is a joyful celebration. And it'll last for a day, and I believe it goes on for a couple of days past that in schools and families. And I mean, it's just a time of celebration that is still celebrated today. It is a national celebration. Now, maybe you know about the book of Esther, and maybe you don't. I want to give you just a little background today as we move along. In the book of Esther, there are four main characters. Now, these main characters in the book of Esther is, number one, there's King Ahasuerus. Now, the king, he's the king of Persia and Media. Now, Persia is Iran. Persia is modern-day Iran. King Ahasuerus, he was the king of Persia at that time. There's 127 provinces, and his kingdom reached all the way from Ethiopia to Persia and even into India today. So a huge kingdom King Ahasuerus had. Now, his right-hand man was a man named Haman. Now, I always remember Haman as the bad guy because his name also can be, it's the word hateful starts out. Hateful Haman, that's what I like to call him. He's wicked, but he's the king's right-hand man. He's the prime minister of Persia. He's an Iranian that hates the Jews. Isn't that interesting considering what's going on in the world today? There is a huge, discussion and debate about Iran and president over there and how they hate the Jews and they want a nuclear weapon and they've decided to destroy the Jewish people and all like that. So some things never change. So there's King Ahasuerus, there's Haman. He hates the Jews, and he is the prime minister, or the right-hand man of the king. Then there's, of course, Esther. That's who the book is named after. And then there's Mordecai. Mordecai is Esther's uncle that gives her good advice. And there's many, many applications. There's only 10 chapters in the book of Esther. You could probably read it in 30 or 40 minutes. I would encourage you to do so. It is a beautiful story. And every time I read it, I think about God in the shadows watches his own. There's something interesting about the book of Esther. The name of God is not mentioned in the whole book, but you see the hand of God on every page. You see how God preserves his chosen people. Now, I want to give just a quick summary of the book of Esther and some of the things that are going on there. Now, Esther becomes the queen. The king does not know that she's a Jew. Now, there's a story all in that about the first three chapters, but Esther becomes the queen. The king does not know that she is a Jew. Now, during this same time that Esther is being chosen as the queen to King Ahasuerus, Haman is introduced unto us. And Haman is exalted to the position of being above all the other princes in the kingdom. It said in Esther chapter 3 and verse 1, after these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And so Haman is exalted to what we would call the prime minister or the vice president. He is the right-hand man to the king. He's above all the other princes. He's as high as you can go without being the king. And so we see Haman here. But after he is exalted to this high position, he meets a man in the street. Now, the law was that everybody would bow down and pay reverence to Haman when he walked by. But there's a man out there whose name is Mordecai. Mordecai is a Jew, and Mordecai will not bow down and pay reverence to Haman. And so Haman hates him in spite of all of his good fortune, in spite of all of his power and influence that he has. It just drives him insane with hatred that this Jew named Mordecai will not bow down and reverence him. So Haman makes a plot, gets a plan to destroy all of the Jews, and he convinces the king to pass a law to destroy all of the Jews. And I'm going to read out of chapter 3 in verse number 10. The Bible says, "And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jew's enemy." And so Haman caused a law to be written. I'm going to skip down to verse 13. "And the letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey." And so Haman has a law passed to kill and destroy all the Jews because he hates Mordecai so bad. That once again sounds like the dispute today between Persia and Israel. And the king of Persia, or the Ahmadinejad, you know, he's said outright he wants to destroy and to kill all the Jews. Well, I've got to move along. A wonderful chain of events takes place where several things change. Number one, Esther risks her life. Now, she's the heroine in this story, and God uses her to save her people. And so she risks her life by going before the king. Through a chain of events, two feasts that she makes for the king and Haman, she exposes Haman for what he really is. And she also lets the king know at that time that she is a Jew and that Haman's law is going to affect her as well, and she's going to be destroyed. Well, one thing leads to another, and Haman ends up being hanged upon a gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And so we see God in the shadows watching over his own, and Haman is hanged upon the gallows that he had built to hang Mordecai upon. Now, usually the story ends right there, but that is not the end. There was still this matter, and this is what I'm getting at today. There's still this matter of an unalterable law that was passed in chapter number 3, that all Jews would be killed on the 13th day of the 12th month. Now, that presented a problem for Mordecai and Esther and all of the other Jewish people, because the Bible says in Esther chapter 8 and verse number 8, this is King Ahasuerus speaking to Mordecai concerning this law. He said, "For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse." Now, the kings of Media and Persia at that time, now this is very foreign to us in America, but their kings actually did what they said they would do. Isn't that interesting that these heathen pagan kings, when they said they were going to do something, they actually were bound by the law to do that? They could not reverse what they had said. They made a promise and they had to keep it. Wouldn't that really just be that would just be in America that's unheard of. That's unheard of. I mean, people are so used to being lied to that they don't think nothing about it. I mean, that's just part of getting elected, isn't it? Well, that book, How to Kill 11 Million People, that really talks about that in great detail. And but now this king, King Ahasuerus, he said, "Hey, we've took care of Haman, but there's still the matter of this law." And the king didn't know what to do. What are we going to do about this law? I've passed this law that all the Jews are going to be killed and put to death, and this is my word, and it's sealed by my ring, and it cannot be reversed. Do you remember in the book of Daniel, King Darius wanted to set Daniel free? You know, they had tricked him into passing a law that nobody would pray, and Daniel did, and Darius, he said, you know, this is the law. And so they had to throw Daniel, even though he didn't want to throw Daniel into the lions. He did. He was a king of Persia as well. Darius was. So they made a promise. They had to keep it. And the king did not know what to do. What are we going to do? So he turns this problem over to Mordecai. And he tells Mordecai, the Jew, Esther's uncle, he says, "Here, you write a new law. I don't know what to do." Well, Mordecai wrote a new law. I'm going to read this to you here. It's very interesting. Chapter 8 and verse 8, the king said to Mordecai, "Write ye also for the Jews." Here, Mordecai, you write the law. Write a new law. "Write ye also for the Jews as it liketh you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring." And that's where he said, "For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse." So he said, "Mordecai, you write a new law. You write a law to offset the other law." And so Mordecai did. Verse 11, the Bible says, "Wherein," this is what Mordecai wrote, "wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for prey." He said, "Here's the new law. We can defend ourselves. We can gather ourselves together, and when we're assaulted, we can fight back." And they did that very thing. Verse 13 says, "The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, and that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies." And so I've got a note in my Bible, says the original Second Amendment. They wrote a law saying we can defend ourselves if we're attacked. And so they did that very thing. Chapter 9 and verse 2 said, "The Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hand on such as sought their hurt. And no man could withstand them, for the fear of them fell upon all people." And verse 5 says, "Thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, and slaughter and destruction, and did what they would unto those that hated them. And so the Jews were saved as a nation. Now, we usually end with Haman being hanged on his own gallows, but it goes on down, and we see that there was a law written that they could defend themselves against their enemies, and so they did defend themselves. And so the topic today has been the Feast of Purim. This is what they celebrate tomorrow. This week in Israel, they're going to celebrate the holiday of Purim, which is the turning of events in favor of the Jewish people, where they, instead of being slaughtered, they were able to defend themselves, and so their enemies were destroyed. Isn't there a lot of application there? We could talk about Israel. We could talk about Iran. We could talk about America and the Second Amendment. You know, there's a few times that the word secure is mentioned in the Constitution. First of all, in the opening preamble, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, it goes on down and says, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America, to secure the blessings of liberty. And then in the Second Amendment, we see the word security. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Do you want to remain free? Now, I know a lot of people, they don't agree. They think guns ought to be outlawed and done away with, and nobody should have them. Well, that's what they thought in Nazi Germany too, and they went and turned their guns in, and then they ended up in the ovens. They ended up on the trains going to the death camps. And that is how you kill 11 million people. You lie to them. You get them to believe a lie. And you take away their ability to defend themselves. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Let me close by saying just a few more things today. You can go back about 20 years in this nation. I'm sure you could go back farther than that. Well, you can. I know you can. But really, the process has been expedited in the last 20 years, and especially in the last few years. But you can go back to Bush number 41. You can go back to Bill Clinton and his 8-year presidency. You can go back to George W. Bush and his Patriot Act. You can come up to Obama in the past 3.5 years as his presidency. And every one of these men are highly guilty of passing laws to destroy a free people. I don't have time to go into all that today, but they're guilty of passing laws to destroy a free people, not preserve a free people. We need to ask ourselves, where are we going? Where is it going to take us? And are we going to allow this to happen in our nation? There's many, many things. My time's quickly come and gone today, but next week, Lord willing, we're going to look at the little book, How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Same things. This is what I'm getting at. The same things that Hitler did, our presidents, our government has done and is doing successfully in our nation over the past 20 years. We need to wake up. We need a spiritual awakening, and we need just an awakening of caring about what's going on in our country. Well, we do appreciate each and every one that listens in. Tell somebody what's going on. Get them to wake up, pay attention. Noah's going to give the contact information. Thank you so much for listening in today. Have a great day, and God bless you is our prayer.
This has been Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to reach us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at www.mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANON. bannonbcc.org.